You're tuned to Closer Look here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's NPR station. I'm Jim Burris.
And I'm Rose Scott. All eyes are on Cleveland, Ohio, as the Republican National Convention gets underway. Party leaders are remaining optimistic that if the nomination will be a smooth process. But a recent Fox News poll indicated just 74% of Republicans back the presumptive nominee, Donald Trump, over Hillary Clinton. That's down from 82% in May. And then there's this from that same poll. 50% of Republicans want a different nominee than Donald Trump.
Could a dissatisfied group of convention delegates try to disrupt what's typically billed as an all-for-one type of nomination process? In an interview with the Milwaukee Journal, Reince Priebus, chairperson of the Republican National Committee, said, "Given the drama that we've had, I think now more than ever, the role of the convention is to assist in the unification of the party, and it's going to be extremely important." But is that going to happen? Joining Closer Look to talk about the potential for drama at the convention is Alan Fox, director of Georgia Republicans for the Future. Debbie Dooley is president of Conservatives for Energy Freedom and a co-founder of the National Tea Party. And Michael Roundtree, a senior at Morehouse College and political director of the Morehouse College Republicans. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Let's begin with this. Do you consider the Republican Party to be splintered?
You know what? I think the party right now is incredibly splintered. And I think you've seen that from not only from the platform committee debate, but you've also seen it from the debate over Governor Mike Pence. You've seen it over the rhetoric of the nominee Donald Trump. So you can kind of pick your poison as to where the party is splintered, both from a moderate standpoint to a more conservative standpoint, from a demographic standpoint it's splintered, and I think from a regional standpoint it's splintered. So it'll be really interesting to see how party leaders this week try to unite the party, but more importantly, grow the party in order to win. So it'll be interesting to see how they bridge the gap.
Well, I can tell you in 1976, the Republicans were very splintered between Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan, and Gerald Ford lost to Jimmy Carter. In 1980, the Republican Party was extremely splintered between George Herbert Walker Bush and Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan actually had less support from Republicans than Donald Trump has at this time point, and the party still came together. I think with the addition of Mike Pence as the VP, I'm very proud of that. I'm glad, because I can think back to 2010. Mike Pence spoke very highly of the Tea Party. He was a regular speaker at a lot of Tea Party meetings. There is no greater unifier out there than Hillary Clinton. And I think after this convention, the Supreme Court's at stake, I think the party will be unified. And I've already heard from like three Never Trump people after Mike Pence was added to the ticket as VP that are now saying, hey, let's make America great again.
So, Debbie, you're saying splintered but coming together.
Yes.
Michael.
Without a doubt, I believe the party is splintered. And from my perspective, it's because of a lack of an understanding. It's a lack of a reach out. There are many people within the party that identify with Republicans, that identify with the conservative ideology, that don't feel a part of that message, that don't feel as if leaders today are listening to them, their demands, and responding to that effectively.
And I can tell you the 2016, to sum up the 2016 Republican primary process, it's been a battle between Wall Street Republicans and Main Street Republicans.
I want to step back there to something you just said. So how would you all, first for the panel, do you agree that there are Wall Street Republicans and Main Street Republicans primarily?
I think in order to win as a party, we have got to stop looking at each other by these labels of you're with me or against me. One thing that unifies us, yes, is opposition to Hillary Clinton. But I think another thing that unifies us is conservative values and principles and a history of coming together no matter who we are. I mean, Republicans in New York City are going to be a little bit different than Republicans here in Atlanta. At the end of the day, we come together and we work together. And I think Debbie correctly mentioned, the primary was incredibly fractured. But the point of the convention is to put all of that behind us and work together and really make inroads. As Michael has said, there are people, there are populations that have not been reached out to. The point of the convention is to show diversity in the party, reaching out of the party, and not fighting amongst ourselves. And that is something that I think is really needed by both people that are never Trump, and as Debbie said, there are people that are pro-Trump. So it's something that we're all looking forward to see, is leadership in uniting the party, and a lot of us haven't seen that quite yet.
Well, there's certainly diversity within the Republican Party, diversity amongst the conservative word. I believe there are two I don't know if I would give like the title of mainstream or Wall Street. I believe there are conservatives that are willing to hear and listen to the message that their constituents have and respond effectively. And I believe there are those Republicans, those individuals that are stuck in their ways and wish to promote the ways that they think things should take place. And so with that being said, there is a message. There's only a certain way that you can unify people. You have to have a message that they can both adhere to, understand, and go out and explain to their friends. That's how you spread a movement. With a lot of the messaging coming now from the RNC, with a lot of the messaging coming now from our presumptive nominee, I can't go to my specific communities and do just that. That's not something that I can do. I can't go to the Western or South Fulton County and talk about, you know, some of the issues, some of the messages that are being put out there. The same with the South Side of Chicago. I just simply can't go home with a Trump badge on and say, you know, I'm here to talk about the best interest of our community.
And I certainly cannot go to the LGBT community and somehow talk about, I think, the importance of Donald Trump, particularly with the nominee of Governor Pence and signing a religious liberty bill that allows for discrimination and putting the economy at risk. And at the same time, justifying the rhetoric behind the platform, even if the platform is just kind of pro forma and not a big issue. It is a rhetoric that makes it very difficult to go into communities that really haven't been reached out to the party. And I know you were trying desperately, because the Republican Party, and Michael has seen this, we are at a rendezvous with a Democratic destiny in terms of what the American public looks like in 2016. Okay. And in 1980 and 2016 is a totally different America, and a Republican Party that does not speak to that loses. And I think we'll find that out in November.
Alan and Michael, you all might be considered at a unique intersection here. Alan, you identify as a gay man who's also a Republican. Michael, you identify as an African-American man who's also a Republican. So given, and Debbie talked about the selection of Governor Pence being a good selection, let me ask you this. Can you support Donald Trump, Alan?
I think with the nomination of Governor Pence probably makes it impossible that I could support the ticket of Trump and Pence. Mike Pence, I've spent the past 2 years fighting the religious liberty bill here in Georgia, because I believe it perpetuates the perception of discrimination, not just against the LGBT community, but actually puts the economy of our state at risk and hurts job creation. And Mike Pence signed a bill, hurt the economy of his state, and did something that I think was incredibly not conservative, making the state a bad place to do business. So it hurts on two fronts, Rose. And that, to me, is I'm seeing the party go back instead of going forward to appeal to a different sect of the country.
Certainly, I would agree. There is a regression, I guess, in the thoughts and in the actions of our leaders. Donald Trump is not someone that I can support. Even with many of his leaders here in Georgia being friends of mine, mentors of mine, he's just not someone that I can put my support behind. And just thinking about the different types of discrimination, of the rhetoric that's spewed with respect to Muslims, with respect to ISIS, it makes it hard for me as an African American to stand on the sidelines and say, well, I agree with them. Because in very fact, I mean, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, these are thoughts, these are actions that were looked towards my people. I mean, so it's hard for me to stay on track and to agree with much of what he's saying.
Well, I have been a Trump supporter from the very beginning. I had met with him at a meeting in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, and I truly believe we need drastic change in Washington, D.C., and I decided to support a grenade thrower, which is Donald Trump. The system is corrupt with money in the system, K Street lobbyists. Our elected representatives do not listen to their constituents. They listen to the big money of Wall Street and K Street. And I believe in order to achieve the drastic change and kind of take some of the money out of the process, we needed a grenade thrower that can go in and just throw that grenade and let's start changing the process. I like Mike Pence. I am a Christian, and I believe that we've got to have the Christian vote to win in November. And that's something that's important. You can't turn your back on Christians because you're offended. The Republican Party is a big tent that has room for everyone in the Republican Party. And there's too much attention paid to the Republican platform. It's not like it's a roadmap that Republican elected officials actually follow. It's not.
But would you agree that people pay attention to messaging, and you being on an insider, if you will, may have that thought process, but for someone who is trying to make an informed decision, they hear this messaging, and based on what Alan and Michael just said, can you understand the voter out there maybe not understanding the messaging as it relates to maybe Muslims or the stance they've taken on within the LGBT community? Can you understand how that might get lost?
I can understand that, but again, I believe it's a big, you know, it's a big tent. Is everybody's welcome within the Republican Party. Nobody, I would match the Democrat platform against the Republican platform any day of the week and let the voter decide which one is best. I think national security will be keeping our nation safe. I think when voters go to cast their votes in November, all this other things that we're talking about will be tuned out because they're going to be focused on voting for the candidate that they feel can best protect our nation.
Yep. I'm going to put you all on the spot then at this point. And Alan, Michael, you said you cannot support a Donald Trump ticket. Does that mean you will not vote for Donald Trump?
Probably not. I voted Republican since 2000. So my first vote was for George W. Bush. I voted Republican in every single presidential election since then. I've worked on campaigns. I worked for the Republican governor of this state. Ronald Reagan is my idol. Margaret Thatcher is my idol. So it makes it very difficult to look myself in the mirror and vote for someone that I think is espousing certain rhetoric that makes it very difficult, I think, to get behind. And so that is one of the reasons why that I'm taking a step back. Now, am I voting for Secretary Clinton? That might be a far reach, but that is a possibility. And writing in a Libertarian candidate might be an option as well. But for those of us that are waiting for that outreach to make the tent as big and broad, we've been waiting. We're kind of like the guy, the girl at the prom waiting for to be asked for, to go on a date. It's you're kind of waiting for that outstretched arm, and we're not seeing it.
Michael? For me, it does mean that I'm not voting for Donald Trump. Now, who I am voting for, I haven't decided just yet. I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's not something that I can, I guess, live with, just knowing her record with respect to my community as well. The option of Gary Johnson of the Libertarian ticket is something that I'm heavily considering and something that I'm researching more into here. When it comes to the big tent and the party, it's rough because as a Republican, my focus has primarily been community engagement. And it's hard to bring someone into the picture if others that's in the picture don't want them there. It's hard to say that I'm going to engage African-Americans or even Muslim African-Americans, and tell them that, you know, the conservative message is one that can truly propel you in life. If you would like to hear and live the American dream, then, you know, come follow me. It's hard to say that. And then when I get there, you know, there are people that's asking about what you're wearing. It's hard to bring them there. Once I get there, if there's people that's questioning your religion, you know, that's questioning your very sanctity to this nation. I mean, as conservatives, we're supposed to hold the Constitution hard. I mean, close to heart. That's supposed to be it. Freedom of religion is one of those things. I mean, that's something that we should truly feel strong about. And as Republicans, it seems as if we apply lenses to different situations. And if it's a Christian lens applied to religion, it's fine. But when we look at a Muslim or a person practicing Islam, then it's a different lens that's applied. And that's kind of hard to think about. It's kind of hard to live with and move on in a party when those are the actions that are taking place.
I support Donald Trump's stance that we need to halt. I don't support it based on religion, but I do based on countries that they're coming from that have a lot of radical Islamic terrorists in the country, that halting immigration on a temporary basis until we can come up with a better screening process. President Jimmy Carter, during the Iran hostage crisis, he halted immigration from Iran. So this is something that Donald Trump's talking about that's not new, but look at the attack that just took place where all those civilians, including 10 children, were murdered. And, I mean, our war is with these radical extremists. It is not with Islam, but you do need to call out your enemy. And we need to stress it that most of the Muslims are peaceful. In fact, a lot of Muslims are actually victims of this terrorist attack. Look at what ISIS is doing. They're going after Muslims that don't agree with their ideology, but it's just this radical Islamic element that's out to destroy our nation. And I think it's just a matter of time before they start targeting soft targets in the United States.
Would restricting Syrian immigration to the U.S. stop that?
I think until we get a better screening process, and I think it should be temporary until we get a better screening process in place. We are a nation of immigrants, but this is a different time.
I want to move on, if we can, back to the convention. There's this term, the so-called conscience clause, and the Rules Committee basically shut that down, which means delegates have to vote for the candidate they're pledged to and not the one they themselves support. Is this good, or do you believe the delegates should be able to unbind their candidate support?
I think it's excellent. I think this is, the whole thing was ridiculous because the delegates represent the voters. In Georgia, the Georgia taxpayers actually pay for the cost of Republican primary elections. I think there needs to be a change. In Alabama and also in Ohio, delegates that want to be delegates to the National Convention are actually on the ballot in the primary process, and the voters just go down and select so many delegates. Why have a primary election if delegates are going to go and vote for who they want to vote for? They are there to represent the voters in their district, and you can't change the rules in the middle of the game. It'd be like when Alabama was playing Clemson for the national championship, and Alabama went ahead after the onside kick. For the NCAA, all of a sudden said, okay, we're going to say onside kicks are illegal, so the ball goes back to Clemson. If you don't like the way the game is played, you can't change it in midstream, and that's my issue with it.
But for the presidential election, we have an electoral college that makes these decisions, and sometimes, it's rare, but sometimes that is in disagreement with the popular vote. How is this different?
I think this is different because with the electoral college, you know what the rules are. And there are certain rules that have been in place with the Georgia Republican Party. In fact, it is Georgia law that clearly states that if you're elected as a delegate, you have to file an oath with the Secretary of State's office pledging and file an oath swearing that you will support the person at the convention on the first round that you're pledged to support. And it's a violation of law if you go to Cleveland and you decide, I'm not going to vote for that person, because that would be perjury. It is important. Again, it's not changing the rules in the middle of the ball game, and that's exactly what was attempted. And this is what is in place. If you're going to let a lot of party insiders decide the nominee, why bother to charge taxpayers for the cost of a primary election if you're not going to be bound by the will of voters. And I will always stand up for the will of voters.
Michael, what are your thoughts on the conscience clause?
Yeah, so I can understand Debbie's point to the matter of fact of rules. I mean, if there's a set legislation or set body of rules, then they should be enacted and should be followed. All of that aside, the conscience clause is something that I believe in. I mean, as a Republican, as a citizen, people change. I mean, their views change. I mean, we've seen the myriad of evolutions with Hillary Clinton, with Barack Obama. I mean, good and bad. But you should, as a delegate, be allowed to make decisions based upon those evolutions. You should be able to make decisions based upon the message that your candidate or presumed candidate is sending. And if your candidate's gone left field, as Donald Trump has gone so many times, I believe the delegates should have the right to not vote for him if that's what they're choosing not to do.
Alan?
You know, Donald Trump won fair and square. And I think it would be very disingenuous for us to take away his right to become the nominee from backroom deals. I think Debbie and Michael and I have experience with party politics, and sometimes that does not express the proper will of the people. And as someone who is not a supporter of Donald Trump, you've got to take a step back and actually give the candidate some credit. To win the Massachusetts primary and the Mississippi primary is pretty impressive. And it shows, I think, the breadth of support that he has within the party. And to go to a convention delegate meeting at 11 o'clock at night and take that away from him, I don't think gives the illusion of a party that is supporting democracy. So I would not be for it. And quite frankly, the conscience clause is supported by Ted Cruz supporters, who I think is equally as divisive as a candidate. So it's a little bit cloak and dagger that we know what they're candidate for. Now, if it were John Kasich supporters, that's a whole nother. I'm kidding.
Let's move on to some highly anticipated platform issues here. We know these are topics that the party will hit hard on campaign trail. And we're going to start with this one, which is immigration reform. Now, we're looking at provisions that include building a wall, hammering down on amnesty, sanctuary cities, and guest worker programs. And Michael, I'll start with you. Do you agree with these provisions? And even though if it's preliminary right now in terms of what the platform and what the campaign will be, what are your thoughts on that?
Again, I have to think about my communities. How am I going to go back to South Side of Chicago, West Side of Chicago, with the idea, and speaking to my Hispanic brothers and sisters, that, you know, this is a candidate that's going to build a wall. You know, we're going to build a wall, and I want you to support that. You can't do it. It's not something that I'm for. It's not something that I believe will fix the problems that we're facing as a country. Surely immigration reform is something that needs to take place, but I guarantee you take all of the illegal immigrants from this country tomorrow. You take all of the immigrants that are working jobs that Americans, you know, have the aptitude to work but just are choosing not to work, and I guarantee you see a direct change in the economy. You'll see a direct change in what's going on with respect to agriculture here in Georgia, with respect to agriculture in other southern states. You'll see a huge change. And so I think that we need to constructively and compassionately address that issue. But with rhetoric such as building walls or stopping immigration from certain places based off of religion, it's not rhetoric that one can be enacted or two will attract people to this big tent.
Debbie?
I have a house in Gwinnett County, and I actually have a fence around my house to protect my property. I believe the United States has a right to have a wall to protect our property in this day and time when it's so easy for terrorists just to walk across the border. And I know people that are from Mexico that came here legally. And I had a man that does my lawn care. He went through the process. He's from Mexico. And he saw a Donald Trump sign in my garage. And he said, you know, I like him. He said, you have a fence around your yard to protect your property. He said, this nation has a right to have a fence around to protect this nation and screen those that are coming in. And he told me something I had never thought of. The fact is, in his business, he followed the steps, followed the loopholes. He's here legally, and yet he's competing with others that did not follow the process and that pay a lower wage, and that's hurting the people that are here legally that follow through the steps. So I do support that.
Let me ask you, Debbie, would you support a wall on the northern border?
Yes, absolutely I would. I believe we have a right, especially in the age of terrorism. I mean, how else are we going to keep terrorists out of our country?
Michael, you want to respond?
Yeah, so just my interjection is it's the 21st century. I mean, I don't exactly know what a wall would do. I just don't see how a wall from the Canadian border, or either from the Mexico border from the south, will effectively protect the United States from all of the threats that we have. I think that a low budget terrorist perhaps maybe would stop. But if we're talking about multi-million-dollar industries such as what ISIS has, I don't think a wall is going to stop that. They're going to have more creative ways of infiltrating the country, and we need to be more smart and thinking about how to combat those ways.
Well, Alan, let me throw this to you, because Debbie has been talking about a wall in terms of terrorism, but when we're talking about immigration reform, it also includes guest worker programs and amnesty and people who are fleeing some pretty horrific situations. So can you support that provision if it's all lumped together on the immigration reform, when you have half of it talking about terrorism and the other half talking about maybe even preventing from helping people who need help?
I think Donald Trump has given this huge perception battle and exposed, I think, what Debbie has rightly said. There is a national security component now when we talk about immigration that wasn't there when we talked about it in 2013 and when we talked about it even during the George W. Bush administration. So I do think that Donald Trump has brought the issue into the foreplay. While I disagree with his rhetoric, I understand the concern that a lot of Trump voters have when they look at immigration. And I don't question the motivations of Donald Trump when he talks about the immigration. I do question a lot of the rhetoric that he uses, which has been incredibly divisive. And Debbie rightly brings up Gwinnett County, which will probably is one of the most diverse counties that we have in the state of Georgia. And when we talk about policies as a party and as a nation, we have to realize how that resonates with an immigrant community, with our minority community. And there's people like the member of Debbie's community who actually sees it as an issue that I believe in supporting the fence. But there are millions of others of Americans that see it as an attack on them as human beings. And I think it brings a human component in. And it's just such a divisive subject right now that I think a lot of us Republicans are looking for calmer heads to talk about in a way that protects this country but stays true to who we are as a nation of immigrants. And Michael has a point. Walls sometimes will not keep out a more strident terrorist. Who would have thought that a man with a truck would drive through a parade on Bastille Day in France? And who would, quite frankly, who would have thought that a man would go into an LGBT nightclub and slaughter 49 people? ISIS will find a way to attack this country, and I do not think a wall in Mexico or Canada will protect this country more than taking the fight to ISIS. So it's kind of tit for tat, but I think we need to look at the way we are portraying our policies that really could alienate a lot of important communities.
And I do wish, and for the record, like you, I don't agree with all the rhetoric. I think Mr. Trump needs to tone it down a little bit, and he has toned it down. So just for the record, I may agree with his stance, but that doesn't mean I agree with the divisive rhetoric.
Do you believe if elected president that would change?
I believe he already has changed. I believe that, I believe he has changed. I think Mike Pence will add a calming influence on Mr. Trump, but I do believe he's already toning down the rhetoric. His speeches are, reading from the teleprompter. I do believe that. But he has really, his rhetoric got everybody's attention, and it awakened sleeping giants. I've actually spoken to Democrats that are upset about the trade policy. They're very upset because about the trade. So I do believe that Donald Trump has an opportunity to bring the Reagan Democrats back in to the Republican Party fold, and I don't believe there's anyone out there. I mean, if you put Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, I can tell you who I think is best to protect me. I mean, Mrs. Clinton couldn't even protect the ambassador in Benghazi. I trust Donald Trump to protect us. I have a 7-year-old grandson. I'm concerned about his protection. And he has been deeply affected watching all of this on TV, on Fox News. He's concerned. 7 years old, and yet he has to worry if he goes to a parade, if a terrorist is going to, I'm sorry, I'm emotional, just come down the road in a truck and kill innocent people. And that's upsetting. I believe that national security will be the theme that people vote on in November. It's going to come down to national security. Who do we think can keep us safe?
Take a moment. That's okay.
Okay.
There have been reports of movements here in Georgia to stop Trump at the convention, to shake things up. Do you know of any Georgia delegates who plan to do that, despite what state law says?
I think they would have, but I do think a lot of them were former Cruz supporters. I do think that they may try, but at this point, I think adding the conscience clause was the last hurrah for them. I think it's over. I fully believe that by the time Donald Trump accepts the nomination, that Republicans will be more unified, that they will be upset about what's going on. And if there are protests in Cleveland and like I've seen out in California, that will help unify the Republican Party because people will be upset about violent protest.
Let me ask you all this as we prepare to wrap up, because you've all have talked about rhetoric. And for some people, rhetoric also means deception, because you're saying something you know it's not true. But many would argue that Mr. Trump used that rhetoric, which propelled him to the top. And it, even if elected president, will not be able to make good on those promises, and have since, you know, led people through rhetoric with campaign promises that he couldn't possibly be able to go through it. Alan, what's your response to that?
I mean, it's kind of tragic. And you just see, you hear the emotion, the legitimate emotion in people like Debbie, who admire this man tremendously and who are putting a tremendous amount of faith in this man to lead our country. And if he gets elected, it's going to be very difficult to get a lot of those promises done. And so there's kind of that. We bring up a really important point here. Only about 16 million Americans vote in Republican primaries. When you go to the general election, you have to compete not just for Republican voters, but independent voters and disaffiliated Democrats. That's a cultural election. And we have tried. The Republicans continue to lose cultural elections. It means appealing to people that do not look, quite frankly, as we'll see on the TV tonight, that do not look like the people in that convention hall. It is the mothers, it is the single mothers, it is the people living across this country that are different shades of color, that are of different sexual orientations, that are saying we're looking for someone to appeal to us. And the frustration that a lot of us Republicans have is that I think is that 72% of the American public believe that we are on the wrong track. This should be a slam dunk election for the Republican Party. This president, I think, quite frankly, has failed us when it comes to national security and protecting this nation. And a lot of us are frustrated to see this party continue to struggle to win, for Donald Trump to win against Hillary Clinton, who represents a third term of Barack Obama. So I think it gets into, we've got to wait and see, and we'll continue to wait after this week at the convention. But there's a whole different audience of people right there this party needs to appeal to, and I really hope they wake up and they realize that America today is looking for someone that talks to a more diverse population.
And I think the Republicans, one of the things that they could do to help appeal is to embrace solar, embrace energy freedom and green energy and technology and innovation. And a lot of people, unfortunately, women, independents, young people, I've had them come up to me because I'm a strong advocate for green energy and solar based on energy freedom, remove the barriers, free market. tell me, I agree with Republicans on 85% of the issues, but they're anti-environment, so I vote Democrat. So I think if we really want to reach a lot of that demographics that we're trying to reach, embrace solar. In Georgia, the Republicans here in Georgia have embraced solar. They pushed through a solar leasing bill. I think the Republican Party is going to have to change their tune on energy, and they would attract more people.
Yeah, I think Debbie is onto something when she's saying embrace certain policies, but I think if you really want to attract people, you have to embrace those communities. And that's what Republicans way too often don't do. When we think about Black Lives Matter, when we think about the atrocities that African Americans are facing in this country with respect to police brutality, Republicans don't address that. Donald Trump is someone that has been very dismissive, and Republicans as a whole have been very dismissive when it comes to Black Lives Matter. I mean, if our goal is to become a party that can answer, well, first off, produce a platform that includes everyone, and then to execute or act on that platform that is of inclusion, then we need to be in those communities talking to those individuals that want that change, and not figureheads or not individuals that we think, you know, are there. We need to go and be there. With respect to Donald Trump and the promises that he's given, I'd rather talk about the promises that he hasn't. I'd rather, you know, talk about what has he offered the Black community. What has he offered? Well, what have Republicans as a whole offered South Fulton? What can the West End of Atlanta look forward to when it comes to Republicans in our state platform? And I mean, the answers are far and few in between.
When we look around this table, there is not a single stereotypical old white conservative among us. Mm-hmm. Two of the three of you say you're unlikely to vote for Donald Trump. Georgia's a heavily Republican state. It's likely Donald Trump will be the nominee. Up against Hillary Clinton, will he triumph then if two-thirds of this body says they will not vote for him?
My answer quite simply is no. I do not see Donald Trump overcoming the barriers he faced with the Black community. Now, some may say you can win presidency without the Black community, but from my view, you can't. That's not something that's going to take place. So absolutely no.
I think he will, because I think Donald Trump's message on immigration and trade appeals across party boundaries, because the bottom line is that it doesn't matter. All the manufacturing jobs that are leaving our nation, that affects every demographic that are out of work, that have been looking for a job and that see these jobs go to other countries, and they see the CEOs of these different large corporations see their bank accounts increase while their workers are displaced to move to other countries. I think Donald Trump will be the president of the United States. I think he will win. I think it will be, I look at this like the 1980 election with Ronald Reagan, where Democrats help propel Ronald Reagan to victory. Again, this is going to be an election also where national security is a primary focus. If I really think that you're going to probably see another terrorist attack within the United States. And it's unfortunate, but people are going to be concerned about soft target terrorist attacks. And they will feel like with Donald Trump's trade policies, his immigration policy, and his tough talk on national security, that he will be the best man for the job.
Alan?
So, and Debbie mentions Ronald Reagan, who was one of our idols. Ronald Reagan, Mitt Romney won more percentage of the white vote than Ronald Reagan did in 1980 and lost the 2012 election. So we are starting, we're looking at the 2012 map. I'm sure Donald Trump will win the state of Georgia, but you're looking at Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, Nevada, Colorado, Ohio, New Hampshire, in which Donald Trump is polling either even or below. And Virginia and Florida have a heavily population of minority communities in which people can attest. I think I saw a poll where he was getting 0% of the African-American vote in Ohio. That should be alarming to any brand or any party. And so you kind of look at the map. I mean, Mike Murphy, who is a strategist for Jeb Bush, says the Republican Party is at war between the people that are the prophets and the people that are the mathematicians. We can count. The mathematicians can count and say, if we don't win the state of Virginia, Florida, Ohio, Nevada, Colorado, we lose presidential elections. Those states have a high population of Latino community. And so we're looking at the math, and we're hoping that Trump can pull it off, but you're just kind of looking at the numbers saying, I don't see it's possible. And you look at that map of red and blue, and those red states are getting a little bit pinker, and those blue states are getting dark blue. And I think, you know, Jim brings up a great point, I think in maybe a presidential cycle or two, Georgia will be a competitive purple state. And counties like Debbie's home county of Gwinnett County will be bellwether counties. And if we continue to alienate these voters, this has – I mean, the Ronald Reagan – I voted for George W. Bush when I was 18 in 2000. That basically cemented me voting Republican for the next few presidential cycles. When we talk to millennial voters who obviously overwhelmingly support Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, we lose those voters. We lose their voting pattern for the next – pattern of presidential elections. So just like with the Reagan Revolution, it cemented a huge amount of generation people supporting the Republican Party. I'm worried that we're losing not just minority voters, but millennial voters who kind of bank in their voting behavior going forward. So it's tough. And to look at the map right now, you can't be optimistic, but I can see why people could be.
When we started this conversation and Jim asked you all if this Republican Party was a splintered group, and you all agree. Debbie, you've heard the pleas, in a sense, from your fellow guest here today, but you've got to somehow convince not just only these two, but maybe others who think like them to support Donald Trump, to give him that vote. What are you saying to them?
I'll tell them to actually look at what he can do. And to begin with, I've been in politics since 1976. Most people do not start paying attention until like 6 to 8 weeks out from an election. They don't start really looking at everything. And I think after the convention, you will see where Donald Trump, the Republican Party, begins to get their message out. I will tell them to look at hope about bringing jobs back, asking them again, who do you think is best equipped to keep you safe? Somebody that could not even protect and actually outright lied about the reason for Benghazi, or somebody like Donald Trump that's willing to take the fight to the terrorist and do what it takes to protect this nation. He's a job creator. He's created jobs. He wants to talk about reforming trade and bring these manufacturing jobs back to our country. That's important. Immigration. I agree with him on immigration. I do believe on immigration that we need to reform the system to make it easier for people that want to come here, a lot easier than what it is, and make it a lot quicker. So I do believe that. Everybody's been impacted. This is an election where the people are speaking up and we're saying we're mad as heck and we're not going to take it anymore. I do think as far as the gay and African Americans have been impacted by manufacturing jobs going out of this country. Look, and Donald Trump was criticized by the Christian community because of the stance he had about the restrooms in North Carolina. So, I mean, I do think, and I would urge the African American gay community to actually look at that the president is actually set policy, not the vice president. You're voting on president, not vice president.
Real quickly, as we wrap up here, and I want to direct this question to Alan and to Michael. 2020, potentially 2024, if the Democratic Party wins both of those elections, in 2024, will we still be having these conversations about what the Republican Party is or isn't? Or do you believe that so much time will have passed that it will have reblossomed?
I'd say by 2024, we're looking at major, major differences in demographics for the United States. And if the Republican Party stays on the path of isolation that we're on now, it's hard for me to see the party existing. It's hard for me to see the party garnering enough votes to compete on a national level. Locally, I believe fiscal conservative ideologies, the ideas of your community leaders, you know, impacting and making, driving the change that you want, I think that's an idea that can survive. But nationally, I don't see the populace of the United States getting behind a single group of people that's just divisive. And whether that's Republican or Democrats, I mean, they obviously don't have that problem right now. We do. I just don't see that happening. If the party is around, I'd say it's because the party has adopted more, I won't say liberal ideologies, but more accepting ideologies. The idea that you can express your religion in whatever faith that you want to express, and we accept you for it. The idea that we're not going to look at your community geographically or because of the demographics and choose not to engage it, or choose to say that your community has no value to us. If the Republican Party makes those changes, then surely we'll be able to attack the hearts and minds of individuals and show them a different way, to show them that conservative ideology, if you stay the right course, surely you'll reap the benefits of it. That's something that we can do. If we aren't allowing people to come into our party and feel comfortable and to voice their opinions within it, we won't be here. And that's my sole opinion.
Alan.
Jim, you know you're on a Republican panel when we mention Ronald Reagan more than 50 times.
Maybe more than Donald Trump.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe more than Donald Trump. So I think people get a little dramatic here. Ronald Reagan won twice in 1980 and 84, and then his vice president won in 88. And I can't imagine being a Democrat in those times being like, we keep losing. What's happening to our party?
But he did not have the support of the African-American community.
He did not have support of the African-American, nor did he have support of the Latino community as well. So it's obviously a different America, mm-hmm. but the score is still there. We do tremendously well in midterm elections, obviously, when the demographic is older and wider. And we do control, I think, Debbie knows this more than I, an overwhelming majority of governorships. And we actually do control a huge overwhelming majority of legislative chambers, mm-hmm. which sometimes works against us here in Georgia. I have my differences with, obviously, the Religious Freedom Bill. But so I do think that the death of the Republican Party is grossly exaggerated. Our democracy works when we have two strong parties. We have to have that. And God help us if we have one big Democratic Party that keeps winning the White House over and over and over again and gets complacent. That's what we're dealing with here in Georgia. We have a complacent Georgia Republican Party because we keep winning. I'm sure Debbie will agree with me on
Absolutely
that.
Absolutely agree.
With no competition, and heaven forbid, nationally, we have a nationally Democratic Party that has no competition. They have a built-in demographic advantage. They do whatever they want every 4 years. But I do think that we're going to have a mirror in our face if we do lose in this election and say, how do we rebuild the party? And it's not going to be an autopsy done by party figures in Washington, D.C. It is not going to be that. Donald Trump, when he talks about trade in this country, when he talks about people losing their jobs, I think that has restructured how we talk about trade in this country and jobs in this country. And I've got to give it to him on that because he has turned the Chamber of Commerce and those type of Republicans to rethink about an issue when it comes to jobs and manufacturing, something that was bipartisan, God, what, 3 years ago?
Oh, yes.
And now Trump has changed it. So. We'll see.
Alan Fox, Director of Georgia Republicans for the Future, Debbie Dooley, President of Conservatives for Energy Freedom and one of the founders of the National Tea Party, and Michael Rountree, a senior at Morehouse College and political director of the Morehouse College Republicans. Thank you all for coming in and taking the time.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
I was going to say, will this be must-see TV?
We will definitely. But look. We all get along, though. Do you see us fighting? We don't. We respect each other's
absolutely.
Differences, and you have to do that. Yeah. You have to respect the fact that not everyone
y'all
will
along.
Agree with you.
Y'all getting along, but I mean, this is all off the record, but I mean, one could argue that